From the newsroom of Impact Alpha, I'm Brian Walsh, and this is your Impact Briefing for Friday, April 28th. Today, Impact Alpha's David Bank is joined by Kevin Jones to recap this week's Neighborhood Economics Conference in Jackson, Mississippi.
And so the housing that's being done is being done by the Black Church. There's one church that's bought 120 parcels.
But first, here's what you need to know from this week in Impact Investing. Biden's climate policies are driving a clean energy transformation. The trio of climate and economic legislation signed into law by President Biden will be central to his re-election campaign. 8 months after the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, the new U.S. industrial policy law is speeding the low-carbon transition. At least 600 gigawatts of new solar, wind, and storage are expected to come online in the U.S. by 2030, enough to power more than 100 million homes. That's according to Bloomberg New Energy Finance, which has twice revised its numbers upwards to reflect the rapid uptake. Wind capacity is set to nearly double. Energy storage will grow ninefold. Corporations have announced $52 billion in electric vehicle and battery investments. Small and growing businesses are the key to inclusive development. They need capital. In a guest post on Impact Alpha, Drew Von Glahn calls on DFIs, that's development finance institutions, and institutional investors to prioritize local fund managers and other capital providers in emerging markets who understand the local conditions and can cut checks for the missing middle, the companies that are too big for microfinance but too small for traditional banks. In a podcast interview, Jacob Haar of Community Investment Management tells Impact Alpha's David Bank that many lenders in emerging markets are becoming more fintech savvy than players in more developed markets.
What we're seeing are also emerging markets leapfrogging developed markets like the United States and Europe.
The Arizona Board of Regents is issuing a $75.5 million green bond for Arizona State University's on-campus immersion, serving students learning in person. The bond, highlighted as part of Impact Alpha's collaboration with HIP Investor to flag upcoming bond issuances with social and/or environmental significance, will finance a new academic building and a mixed-use academic and office building for the Tempe campus. HIP Investor rates the issuer a 77%, which connotes to a net positive impact. And finally, Avalanche Energy raised $40 million to build modular fusion microreactors. Fusion energy is considered the holy grail of clean energy. The Seattle-based Avalanche is building modular fusion microreactors that cost tens of millions of dollars, not billions of dollars, and are small enough to fit on a desk.
I'm here with Kevin Jones at the tail end of the Neighborhood Economics Conference in Jackson, Mississippi. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, I'm glad to be here, David. Thank you.
Kevin, it's been a terrific conference. I think folks know you from your SOCAP days.
They do.
This is the new thing. But before we get into the new thing, you've got a whole Mississippi connection that I hadn't quite appreciated. So
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Mississippi.
Well, I'll tell you, Mississippi stays number 50 on some things and number one on the other things. I moved to Mississippi with my wife, who is a native Mississippian, Rosalie Harden, who was the producer of SOCAP and also Neighborhood Economics, when her father was going to sell the family weekly newspaper back up in Itawamba County, Mississippi, which had been the poorest county in the state. And I said, well, let's try that. I can move from the Bay Area to a 2,500 person town in the Appalachian northeast corner of the poorest state. I mean, how different could that be? And stayed there 7 years and was 20 years in Mississippi. And then we were down in Jackson here for a dozen years. And our kids were in public school, and we created a group called Parents for Public School, which is national. And we owned the Mississippi Business Journal, as well as the Catfish Journal, when that was a new industry popping up.
You were the voice of Mississippi business when you owned the Mississippi Business Journal.
I was. It was crazy. I had like 35 radio stations. We did a Mississippi Business Minute on, sold one network ad in the local Avail, and I was on about a dozen cable stations with a weekly business show as well.
Now, Jackson has been in the headlines, and I think folks know a little bit about the water crisis, but not a lot. And I certainly didn't know a lot before I still don't know very much, but I know a lot more than I did a few days ago before I came down here. So why Jackson for neighborhood economics?
Well, you know, neighborhood economics is getting the money that's needed to the folks who don't normally get it. We did SOCAP, which was you could think like a philanthropist and act like an investor. And impact investing has grown really a lot since we started 15 years ago, but it's gone mainstream in a whole lot of ways. And we always thought, the people who founded SOCAP, that impact investing really means that you pay for the cost of doing good. And if it's a good deal that it's market rate, it's not really an impact deal. It's a good deal that's market rate that's doing good. That's not the dominant view in impact. And so as it got mainstream and some of our sponsors are doing really serious impact, but they also in the other part of the house had private prisons or they were privatizing water, we decided to sell to some other folks and do a conference to help get the money that's needed to the folks that don't get impact investing. And so we created Neighborhood Economics. And so it's a national conference, but with a local focus every time. And we go to a different place every conference.
And you've been in Cincinnati and Indianapolis, and yeah. I think next year in San Antonio.
And San Antonio, yeah. And so we have a model. We want to be with a local, regionally focused foundation that works really holistically all the way from the Rotary Club to the grassroots of it. And we bring in faith-based funding. And then we've got the catalytic foundations here. We've got Kellogg and MacArthur and Cerdna and Heron and Robert Wood Johnson says they're going to be coming and those sorts of things. And those folks haven't really commingled, and we're hoping to do more of that.
What was really striking here was how much local participation there was, and in particular, participation from local pastors and churches.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you get them in the room?
Well, you know, Jackson is 85% Black, and so the housing is a real crisis here, but there's been a huge white flight. If you're affluent, you moved north to Madison County. And so the housing that's being done is being done by the Black church. There's one church that's bought 120 parcels, and they're doing so many things. You could buy a house in South Jackson for $10,000 a year or so ago. So there's been renovations. There's been tearing down dilapidated houses. There's been turning commercial property into community centers. And so we worked with them because that's all been done through grassroots work, and also the informal way things are funded in Mississippi is that the smart kid who moves off to Chicago or New York sends money back. So it's an informal network. Mutual aid is a huge thing that isn't mentioned as that, but it's more prevalent in the poor and Black communities. And so we were able to bring in four faith-based institutional funders of considerable size. And we got all the Black churches to do an asset map that was a real serious asset map. What's your square footage? What's your deferred maintenance? What's your mortgage? And what do you want to do with that property? So everybody got excited because there was going to be new money in the room. And so we had huge engagement because they're already doing this work. They're doing kind of like barn raisings every day. They're doing the work of renovating these houses and working for their own community. And then we have institutional money coming in the room.
And so the churches as economic engines, people think, and I think know them as a sort of social connector, but as an economic engine as well, and a kind of a coordinator or convener, like you say, of some of these assets. And some of them have lots of real estate now. And
they do, yeah. And because it's been so cheap, and because, you know, it's one of these leapfrog situations, like why mobile is so big in East Africa is because the phone system was so bad. The Black church has been leapfrogging to fill the housing gap here in a bigger way than I think anywhere else in the country, because nobody else has been doing it.
Now, one of the things I know you like to stress is that you don't just come in and then take off, but you're trying to leave something behind. So how does that work?
Well, we got somebody to be funded in the system entrepreneur role partially that we can leave behind and do all those connections. So we were in looking forward meeting today at the end of the conference. And there were 40 people in the room. We had 300 or so at the conference, but 25 of them were folks from Jackson. And they realized that, you know, there are people from nonprofits, people from churches, people from government. and they didn't know each other, but they were working on similar issues. And so that we bridged those silos for them, and they're agreeing to meet starting next week. And they're going to have regular meetings, and then we're going to stay in touch with them. I mean, it's, you know, there's ongoing work, and we want to help that happen.
You mentioned the term system entrepreneur, and I think earlier you'd used the word community quarterback. It's such an essential role.
It really is. And it coordinates everything, but it's not in charge of anything. So it's the one that does the network weaving between all the groups that want to work. And then with us, we also help them learn creative finance, because there's so much financial innovation that now delivers power to the folks who don't have economic power. Financial innovation, you think of it and it's fintech for things, or it's, you know, around the blockchain or whatever. There's a lot of economic justice, new financial platforms, new revenue share funds, new venture philanthropy funds that are solving the problem of friends and family funding for folks who don't have a rich uncle. And so we're helping those folks create or replicate those new financial platforms.
I had the pleasure of moderating a panel just on what you said, friends and family money for folks who don't have a rich uncle, for sole proprietors. And I know you've got this community equity fund back in Asheville that's trying to sort of pave a way for that kind of model. So just give us the pitch on how you find that kind of money for folks who don't have startup money.
Yeah. So, you know, in Europe and in Asia and in South and Central America, venture philanthropy is a major force. And it's not here in the U.S. And so venture philanthropy means you give, and that philanthropy actually becomes an investment, but it doesn't come back into your pocket. In the U.S., it can go back to a donor advised fund. It can go back to your church. It can go back to a community development corporation. And so, this is something you give to. And what we found is that people in congregations, especially, if they give to this fund, the Community Equity Fund in Asheville, that's looking to be replicated in Greenville, South Carolina, and a couple other places, the money is given, and then it's invested in a sole proprietor. 90%+ of Black businesses are sole proprietors, and they never grow to get the funds from the loan programs that are set up to reach marginalized communities, because they don't have the collateral. They don't have the friends and family that will give them the money to grow, to enable them to be able to handle those debt service loans. Let me tell you how I found the friends and family gap. It's kind of interesting. I was working with two different accelerators with a marginalized community, Optima in Oakland and Mortar in Cincinnati. And so I said, let's solve this friends and family gap by using a Kiva loan. $25, no interest, seems simple. Well, it turns out to get on the Kiva platform, you need 25 friends with $25. And among the 40 entrepreneurs in those two accelerators, nobody had 25 friends with $25. So I'm an affluent white guy. I'd never had seen that gap before. So I became kind of fixated on that gap about 8 years ago and tried a couple different things to solve it. And now we've got one that works. It turns out that you can't make a loan to somebody who can't pay back a debt, but you can give them philanthropic investment, give them a couple of years of runway, and then 3 years to pay back revenue share. And by then, they've grown to get a community development finance, you know, a low interest loan from somebody who's set up to do that. So it seems to be replicable. We've raised $3 million locally from that. Started from really purely friends and family, and then we got a group of church ladies who wanted to give their Christmas gift together, and that was $2,500 from five people. And then we got from a foundation, and then we got to the county, and they said, we'd really like to help. And I said, well, look, give us a pile of money, but judge us on how many sole proprietors become job creators, how many jobs are created, what's the growth in revenue, and what's the growth in income. And the county commissioner said, well, we like to measure that. Said, well, that's why I sold you that. And so they gave it. We now have more than $3 million there, and now we've made it with an online platform. You can get in for as low as $25 into these loans, and so it's a national problem that people don't see.
What else stands out for you here at the Neighborhood Economics Conference? What did you learn this week?
Yeah, you know what? The creativity of people creating assets who don't have assets, the financial innovation by people of color for themselves. Things, neighborhood investment trusts, it's a whole way that, you know, people are preserving Black Wall Streets from predatory hedge fund displacement. by the Neighbors Investing in Neighbors. And so there are four groups that are working on that, that are working together, and they are trying to collaborate on the missing catalytic capital that they all need. So rather than looking at that resource in a scarce competitive way, they're looking to pool for it. And so the amount of collaboration by folks who in other contexts would be competitors to build assets. I mean, racial wealth is a huge gap, and you can solve it through entrepreneurs owning businesses. You can do it through owning commercial real estate collectively, innovative housing solutions. And then we also did a lot on breaking down oppressive, what Andre Perry calls economic architecture, or the rules that keep people down. So there were three different innovative ways to reverse redlining and the valuations that make Black houses not be worth the same as a White House.
There was some very dramatic data around the not only the appraisal disparities, as you said, but then the taxation disparities. So the Black neighborhoods actually are subsidizing the white neighborhoods.
That's and in our town in Asheville, we're setting up a repair fund based on that. Our industry's biggest industry is tourism. The Biltmore Mansion is the largest house in the country. To build the Biltmore, they displaced the Shiloh community, some Black folks, and they put them in a bad place with bad drainage. And they built affluent communities next to where they were, called the Biltmore Forest. And so Biltmore Forest has been undertaxed by $4.5 million over the last 20 years on a per square foot basis. And the Shiloh community has been overtaxed by $1.5 million. So we said, you want to do reparations? Here is current damage still being done by both displacement and the valuations.
So what's next for neighborhood economics?
We're going to do the same thing and keep growing it in San Antonio in February. And we have a founding local foundation who is deeply connected to the community, to the grassroots folks, all the way from the Rotary Club to the grassroots to the and the communities of faith. And we're hoping to bring in, you know, a lot of the big foundations, like we had Kellogg here, and MacArthur, and Cerdna, and Heron, and Robert Wood Johnson says they're coming. And so those folks have not co-invested together, even though they work in the same zip codes as some of these faith-based funders, and then people who are investing in your local neighborhood. So uniting those three streams of funding in a local place is our real goal. The faith-based funders, people who want to create a community where their children will want to move back, and then the catalytic funders who want to invest in economic justice with a place-based framework.
So Kevin Jones, you're still turning valuable strangers into unlikely allies?
Yeah, you know, what you discover as you get older is that you're really just doing one thing.
Over and over again.
Over and over again. You know, Steph Curry is driving to the basket, and he looks like Steph Curry as he used to. And so what we're good at is helping people figure out how they can work together in ways that they didn't realize.
Beautiful. Thank you, Kevin Jones, for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here.
And that's going to do it for this week's Impact Briefing. You can read more about all of these stories at impactalpha.com. Thanks to Kevin Jones, David Bank, and our producer extraordinaire, Isaac Silk. Are you ready to try Impact Alpha? Sign up for Impact Alpha Open, totally free, directly at impactalpha.com. If you want to go deeper, grab a subscription and get full access to Impact Alpha, including the award-winning morning brief and our popular Agents of Impact calls. Just go to impactalpha.com/subscribe and choose an annual subscription. If you subscribe today, Friday, April 28th, you can take half off. I'm Brian Walsh. Be sure to check back for next week's briefing. And until next time, take good care.